It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It's not who we are as a nation. It's a wall between reality and his constituents, his supporters.
The speaker has recently defined a brand new dogma for the Democratic Party. Actually enforcing our immigration laws with the help of physical barriers is, quote, an immorality. It seems like Democrats are happy to take their cues from the gentlelady from San Francisco and her extreme fringe position.
All right, Nancy Pelosi first. Walls are immoral. No walls anywhere. They are immoral. And then Mitch McConnell saying what he said. Sandy Rios with you this morning. And so the wall funding for border security, it's not just a wall. You know that. I itemized for you last week what the president is asking. It's not just the barrier. It's more security. It's more humanitarian aid. It's electronic devices, it's more border agents, it's all kinds of things. And so that's what's in the package deal. That's the ask at this point. And Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats are refusing to even go into the room and talk to the president. John Roberts kind of lays it out a little bit better. And so let's hear it. John Roberts, clip one.
In a remarkable move, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi today sent a letter to President Trump asking him to postpone this month's State of the Union address or deliver it in writing. Pelosi said no State of the Union has ever been given during a government shutdown, but she pegged her request to security concerns.
That's a security decision which is completely out of my hands. This is a housekeeping matter in the Congress of the United States so that we can honor the responsibility of the invitation we extended to the president. You can make it from the Oval Office.
In her letter, Pelosi pointed out the Secret Service is in charge of security and that, quote, the U.S. Secret Service and Department of Homeland Security have not been funded for 26 days now, with critical departments hamstrung by furloughs. Hold on, said the Homeland Security Secretary today, Kirstjen Nielsen tweeting, the Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. Secret Service are fully prepared to support and secure the State of the Union. A Secret Service official tells Fox News no one from Pelosi's office contacted them to ask about it, and that the Secret Service has been preparing for the event for months, saying, this is a no-fail mission. New York Democratic Congressman Elliot Engel seemed to suggest it was more about sending President Trump a message than security.
I don't think that we can go along with business as usual. So I think there has to be something done to show the frustration of the Congress.
So that was John Roberts, at least part of his report on Fox News last night. You get the gist of it. Nancy Pelosi's letter basically says, you know, on January 3rd, it's her role as speaker to issue an invitation. This has been happening for decades to the president of the United States to deliver the State of the Union address in the chamber. It used to be just delivered in writing in the early days of the country. It was not a public speech like it has become now. So January 3rd, her office did what was normal. They issued the invitation, and now she's not officially rescinding it, but she's saying he doesn't have to do that, and we don't want him to do that, so he should issue it just in writing. And she also says, sadly, given the security concerns, and unless the government reopens this week, I suggest that we work together to determine another suitable date after government has reopened for this address, and you get the gist. You get it. You get what she's trying to do. She's trying to embarrass him, and she certainly does not want him to have an opportunity to address the American people again about what's going on. I'm telling you that people that I trust in Washington are saying that they think the Democrats are losing this battle. In spite of the polls that you see, you know, the polls can say anything. I think they sense that they are losing this. And I think if you look at her harried-looking countenance right now, you would sense that. Last night, Steny Hoyer was interviewed by Brett Baer, and Steny looked really discombobulated. They cannot make their case. It's their position is ridiculous, that walls are immoral, that they won't even talk about compromise or any kind of barrier or prevention on the southern border. That's a ridiculous position that really cannot be defended. And, of course, Nancy Pelosi would not see the Angel Moms in her office day before yesterday. She refused. So they are backing themselves into a corner. I know that you're hearing other things on other news outlets, but I'm telling you, I don't think this is playing well. And so you heard John describe that the Secret Service has said Nancy Pelosi has not even contacted their office. This is the official statement, from a Secret Service person quoted in the Daily Caller. The Secret Service was never contacted by congressional leadership regarding our security plan or the Secret Service's ability to carry it out. Multiple DHS officials and Secret Service veterans have said that Pelosi's not being truthful in her claim that the Secret Service is incapable of protecting the president during the State of the Union. And so, even NBC, Kelly O'Donnell tweeted this, from Pete Williamson on Secret Service and the State of the Union, it's a no-fail mission. We've been planning for this for months, as we always do. It didn't start up 29 days ago and is not being paid. Secret Service is not being paid during shutdown. So Dan Bongino weighs in on this and says that this is going to have no effect on the professionalism of the Secret Service in they're doing their duties. So it's just all bogus, and she's trying to embarrass the president, and she's trying to stop him from having a time with the American people to lay out the dangers on the border once again. So that's what's happening here. Rick Manning with Americans for a Limited Government is suggesting that the president issue, a written State of the Union address and then go down on the border and give the speech at the border, erect a tent, whatever he has to do, and let the cameras go down there and give his speech from there. That makes sense. And by the way, there's a study out by the Center for Immigration Studies that says that the border wall would pay for itself easily. How? I'll read this from, not sure what this outlet is. Sometimes it doesn't print up with the name of the outlet, and I always like to give credit. But it says, using data from the Institute for Defense Analyses and National Academies of Science, the Center for Immigration Studies began by determining how much each illegal alien costs the United States over the average lifespan. The study found that the border wall would only need to stop between 3-4% of future illegal entries, or 60,000, over a decade to amount to $5 billion, which is what President Trump is currently requesting to pay for part of the wall. So that's just a little excerpt from that, but makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? That if we stop illegal immigrants from coming in and we don't have to pay for their, whatever we're paying, their medical care, their schooling, et cetera, fill in the blanks, that we would save a ton of money if we stopped that pouring over the border. I want to move to another thing that I talked a great deal about yesterday, and that was Congressman King. Last night, Congressman Bobby Rush tried to bring censure against Congressman King. You probably heard that Sarah Huckabee Sanders, much to my chagrin, said that Republican leaders did the right thing by stripping him of committee assignments, and she basically joined the bandwagon of the Republican leadership in condemning him, which is just stunning to me and very disappointing. I think, you know, whoever's in the White House, I know Kevin McCarthy has the president's ear. Sadly, it must be an exciting conversation. Anyway, and there are others in there too. And if I had a name, I'd give it to you. I do know some of the names, but they're giving the president bad advice. I think they gave him the bad advice on appointing William Barr Attorney General. I'm being kind by saying bad advice. They are advising him as mainstream establishment Republicans would advise, which is not to our benefit, not to the benefit of the American people. That's what I see happening. So I don't think I just absolutely am offended by what the New York Times has accused Steve King of, but I'm more offended that Republicans would jump on the bandwagon and destroy him as readily and handily and happily as they have been doing. even Britt Hume defended Steve King, as Britt doesn't even like Steve. Britt is more of an establishment Republican. He doesn't like what Steve has done. Steve has been such a champion on illegal immigration, on Western civilization. That's been a theme of his since he's been a congressman. He's very, very bright and well-read about this and very articulate. So Britt Hume referred to the New York Times article. He said it was completely bogus. He said that New York Times piece was completely bogus. I mean, those comments, look, I don't agree with them, and I'm no fan of Steve King. Look, I'm sorry. They do not amount to racism. And yet it goes on. Which reminds me of something we talked about when during the Kavanaugh hearings, and that was this whole thing of ritual defamation. Ritual defamation, which is what Brett Kavanaugh went through. You see it happening all the time. People are targeted. This is the Lilinsky method, and they're targeted for destruction. And so, and people, you know, people around them are too afraid that they're going to have the arrows turned on them. So they, you know, one by one, they fall and they, stick a knife in the back and to save their own skins. But that's, you know, that's got to have a very short shelf life, I'm telling you, because the New York Times is going to come after all of them. That's what I said yesterday. But I want to go back to this. We talked about this ritual defamation during the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, but I want to call your attention to it one more time. Laird Wilcox wrote an excellent essay on this, and that was a number of years ago. It's called The Practice of Ritual Defamation. And his description is this: defamation is the destruction or attempted destruction of the reputation, status, character, or standing in the community of a person or group of persons by unfair, wrongful, or malicious speech or publication. For the purposes of this essay, the central element is defamation in retaliation for the real or imagined attitudes, opinions, or beliefs of the victim, with the intention of silencing or neutralizing his or her influence and/or making an example of them so as to discourage similar independence and insensitivity or non-observance of taboos. And that is exactly what's happened to Steve King. And let me read further in this essay. Any explanation the victim may offer, including the claim of being misunderstood, is considered irrelevant. To claim truth as a defense for a politically incorrect value, opinion, or belief is interpreted as defiance and only compounds the problem. Ritual defamation is often not necessarily an issue of being wrong or incorrect, but rather of insensitivity and failing to observe social taboos. We have put that essay on our Facebook page before, but we're going to do it again. That's Laird Wilcox. It's an essay on ritual defamation, and I think it would be really helpful for you to read that again and share it with people so they'll understand what's going on here. I should share it with members of Congress so they would find their backbone in defending him, because trust me, it's going to come to them next. And as a matter of fact, in the 2 minutes that I have, let me just say this. The Southern Poverty Law Center is the really radical leftist organization based in Alabama. I've talked about it so many times. That has created a hate list, which is really the reason why Floyd Corkins went into the Family Research Council and tried to do mass murder and shot the security guard and was then stopped by him. Because FRC was on the hate list. American Family Association's on the hate list. That's why, while during Obama's administration, the Army and other military facilities started telling their soldiers that they should not have anything to do with the American Family Association, shouldn't give to them. They held us up. I remember seeing the graphic on a chalkboard that we were a hate group and we should be, they should stay away from us. They got that from the Southern Poverty Law Center, and there's a long list of hate groups on their list. They are an outlaw organization operated by leftists out of Alabama. I have no more time to talk about that right now, but I want to tell you that the Center for Immigration Studies and Mark Krikorian are suing the SPLC under a racketeering lawsuit. It's a really powerful argument that they are hurting, of course, damaging reputations and damaging organizations. But I think the Center for Immigration Studies is the first group to really bring a lawsuit like this under the RICO statute, which is generally used for gangsters and racketeering, which really suits, I think, what's been happening at the SPLC. So we'll talk to Mark Krikorian about that at greater detail maybe next week. All right, so stay tuned. More. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The Ministry of Preborn meets abortion-minded women right where they are. When a young mom sees her baby on ultrasound, she's 80% more likely to keep her baby.
And I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
This mom chose life for her baby.
She's been such a joy. Her name even means rebirth and sort of being raised up from the ashes. I now see my daughter, and I cannot imagine my life without my happy, lovely, joyful, smart baby, and I'm so grateful.
Preborn runs and leads Christian pregnancy centers all over the country. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
Where did coal come from? This is Ken Ham, often interviewed on radio and TV on the Bible's reliability. The massive deposits of coal we find around the world are the result of Noah's flood. This catastrophe buried huge amounts of vegetation under miles of sediment. It didn't take millions of years to form. But where did all this vegetation come from? There aren't enough plants on the earth today to produce the huge amount of coal we find. Something must have been different in the past. Well, the fossil record shows us that the world before the flood was nothing like our world now. It was much more lush. Plants even thrived in places that are nothing but barren today. There was more than enough vegetation before the flood to produce all the coal we have today.
Plan your visit to the world-class Ark Encounter Christian-themed attraction when you go to our website at AnswersRadio.com and listen to this program again at AnswersRadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
By all accounts, the Clemson Tigers had a fantastic day at the White House, celebrating their national championship with President Trump. The White House mess hall was closed on account of the government shutdown, so President Trump called on the folks at McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, and Domino's. And the Tigers had a feast fit for a king. Big Macs on silver platters. I mean, come on, that's America. But a good many liberals in the mainstream media say the president's fast food feast was racist and unsophisticated. Good Morning America's Michael Strahan said he planned to feed the players lobster and caviar. But I'm not sure what red-blooded American football player would choose fish eggs over a Filet-O-Fish. And I would really like someone to explain to me how two all-beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun is racist. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. One of the things my thought did not complete, and I want to make sure I complete it. So the New York Times publishes this article accusing Steve King of, in a 49-minute interview, defending white nationalism and white supremacism. And Steve King says, I was trying to say that these words are used against conservatives. And when did these words, and he included that in a series, ended with Western civilization. When did Western civilization become a weapon? When did that become such a bad term? When did it become fall out of favor? He's given a great explanation about it, but no one's listening. And so the New York Times came out with an article yesterday following it, now widening the net and saying that this hate began with people like Paul Weyrich, and who was with Newt Gingrich, and that would include Richard Viguerie. And so the names are beginning to come out. See, the net is going to widen so that other people will be accused now of white supremacism and hate as well. That's how this works. There was an article this morning talking about, well, if we're going to condemn Steve King's language, why shouldn't we destroy, or no, that wasn't the word they used. Why shouldn't we go after the president with the same vitriol, basically? So you see how this is. And so that it just is apparent to those of us who are working in this all the time that this is the net is going to widen. And that's why when I said to you that the Center for Immigration Studies is now suing the Southern Poverty Law Center, which compiles that so-called hate list, which has been used to target many of us. So the Center for Immigration Studies is pushing back, and they are filing a RICO, a racketeering lawsuit, against the SPLC. Honestly, that's the only thing I think that's going to stop this. And one last thing about Congressman King before I introduce our guest, who you're going to enjoy very much. Bobby Rush tried to introduce something to condemn, censorship. He tried to censor Congressman King yesterday, and it did not go through for whatever reason. But the irony is Bobby Rush was a member of the Black Panthers. Talk about extremist, violent extremist. He was a member of the Black Panthers, and he's the one that now wants to censure Congressman Steve King. Oh, all right. Well, enough of that. I've asked Frank Gaffney to join me, and Center for Security Policy has had their own dealings with the Southern Poverty Law Center, as has the American Family Association. So, Frank, before we jump into our topic of the day, I'd just like to know your thoughts about Congressman King and this whole business of hate and the RICO lawsuit.
To be clear, Sandy, and good morning, my dealings with the SPLC, if you can call them that, is that I've been at the receiving end of some of the same kind of ritual defamation, as our friend Stella Morabito calls it, that, you know, has befallen so many others, including, of course, our friends at Mark Krikorian's splendid Center for Immigration Studies, Family Research Council, Brigitte Gabriel's Act for America, and so many others. Who have been, let's be clear, defamed by an organization that is a political warfare instrument of the hard left, which uses the Southern Poverty Law Center, or SPLC, as sort of a cueing device for their swarming attacks aimed at silencing people, particularly, I think, people who are effective in opposing the agenda of the radical left or their unlikely, as it may seem, Islamist allies. And we've certainly been that at the Center for Security Policy. People have said to me, well, you know, wear it as a badge of honor. My old boss, John Tower, used to say about the guy who was about to be tarred and feathered and run out of town on a rail, he said to the townsfolks, you know, if it weren't for the honor, I'd just as soon walk. That's kind of how I feel about this ritual defamation. It's a distinction, shall we say, to come from people who are really, I think, enemies of freedom and just about everything we believe in, and doing what they can to advance the totalitarian agenda of the left and the Sharia supremacists. But I would just say about Steve King, he's the latest target. He certainly won't be the last, as you say, just in the past 24 hours. It's a dragnet is out. Anybody he ever talked to is now, going to be fair game. And this is all about, let's be absolutely clear about this, it's about Donald Trump and getting Donald Trump and taking out people who support him, taking out people who support the sorts of policies that I think he has generally been pursuing that are very sensible and sound by defaming him and his allies as racist and bigots and haters and Islamophobes and the like. It's not true. But like, the big lie of Adolf Hitler's time, if it's repeated often enough, if it is promoted as the SPLC's, political warfare attacks invariably are by the mainstream press, lo and behold, it becomes true for many, and it becomes a real problem, I think, for the country.
Yes, well said, Frank, as always. And by the way, Frank Gaffney is the president of the Center for Security Policy, and you hear him every single morning on this show. He enriches this show daily by giving us a minute commentary with the benefit of his expertise and wisdom on national security. And he also hosts a show on American Family Radio, which airs at, what, is it 10 Eastern Standard Time, Frank?
11 Eastern.
11 Eastern. Okay, all right. So Frank, you know, we're going to talk about something very different, but actually it occurs to me as I'm thinking about our next topic that at this point in our country, we are still at the point of defamation where it's coming it's coming our way. It just is. Those of you that certainly are serious Christians are in for a wild ride, and some of you have already been there. You've been defamed in various ways. But so far in this country, we have not been killed or injured or tortured so far in this country. And that brings me to a new endeavor that Frank has gotten into in the last few years. And he has founded an organization called
Save the Persecuted Christians.
Save the Persecuted Christians. The conference that you're having today at the National Press Club is called Persecuted for Christ. And Frank, I guess I ask a lot, I know you well, but I do want to know this. What event triggered your passion for this project?
Sandy, I think it's just having become cognizant. And as you say, it's only really been in the past year or two about the magnitude of the horror that is taking place in our time, on our watch, with respect to Christians. A group that we've been working with, Open Doors USA, had a press event of their own yesterday in which they released what is, I think, by most people's lights, the authoritative accounting of what's happening to Christians around the world. They call it their World Watch List 2019. And they've assessed that there are today 245 million Christians worldwide who aren't just having a hard time or difficulty finding a job or what have you. They're being, as they call it, heavily persecuted, which means things like torture, as you say, rape, sex slavery, banishment from their homes, the theft of their property, being sold into slavery, being murdered in some cases, sometimes genocidally. I mean, this is what I believe moved me to feel as though, hey, this is an outlandish crime against humanity, and it must be resisted. And the other thing was, my sister actually several years ago had said to me, when we were growing up, Sandy, I grew up with her in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, a couple blocks away from a place called the Tree of Life Synagogue, which, of course, has gotten a lot of notice of late because it was attacked by somebody who murdered 11 Jews there. Well, growing up, there were signs outside that synagogue that said, "Save the Soviet Jews." And my sister said, that campaign, which began with signs like that outside of houses of worship like Tree of Life, which begat a movement to try to do something about what the Soviet Union was doing to its Jewish minority, which was horrific oppression. And it turned into something that a guy I subsequently went to work for by the name of Senator Henry Scoop Jackson. He called it the Jackson-Vanik Amendment, which essentially said to the Soviets, if you're going to treat the Jews badly, you're not going to get something you desperately want. And turned out they urgently needed, called most favored nation status. And you know what, Sandy? They didn't do it. They didn't get most favored nation status. They didn't get all of the benefits that would have flowed from it, financial, economic, and so on. And when this other guy I worked for later, Ronald Reagan, came along, and he was determined not just to, deal with the Soviet Union in a manner that was going to be more robust than what Jimmy Carter was doing, but he decided he was going to take it down. He was able to use economic warfare to do that. And what happened is the wall ultimately came down. Millions of Jews were released from the Soviet, gulags and, horrible oppression. And hundreds of millions of other people were freed as well. So, to answer your question, it's a long answer, but what moved me was the horror that is happening in our time and the example of what can be done when you hold accountable the people who are doing the persecution and you create real costs to them for doing it. the miracle of what happened with Soviet Jewry, I think, can happen for Christians around the world. And our Save the Persecuted Christians initiative, which is launching today at the National Press Club, is going to see if we can't make a movement happen that will have a similar kind of miraculous effect.
Now, so far, Frank, I know that you have been able to engage a lot of different organizations and entities in this country, but you've actually now got some international partners that you're going to feature today. Can you tell us about who they are?
Well, we're going to focus in on a particular problem, Sandy. It's only one of many. In fact, that World Watch list has 50 countries around the world that are among the worst in terms of persecution that range from China and India, you know, through the Middle East and northern and southern or sub-Saharan Africa, even into Latin America. But we're going to focus on one that is particularly ominous, and that is Nigeria, because Nigeria is in the throes of the run-up to another of the kind of horrific bloodlettings and civil wars that we've seen afflict the continent of Africa in recent decades. And if it happens there, in Africa's most populous country, it seems reasonable to expect that we'll see tens of millions of people fleeing that country with unbelievably destabilizing consequences on the continent of Africa and in Europe, and probably far beyond. So we're trying to help a group called ICON and some other Nigerian-American organizations raise the level of attention and urgency on a proposal that we have President Trump appoint a special envoy to try to help forge a very robust American policy towards Nigeria and to help the government of Nigeria understand that they need to become part of a solution here to stop the persecution, particularly of Christians, which is really what's at the leading edge of this unfolding disaster at the hands of Boko Haram and the Fulani militants and the like that are basically trying to impose Sharia across that country. And it's an avoidable disaster, we think, but it's going to take rapid action by the United States government. So that will be a feature of our program today, as well as our own rollout of Save the Persecuted Christians at the National Press Club.
Okay, so let me just get specific. If you are near Washington, D.C. and listening to me, the conference starts today at the National Press Club at 1:30, but you need to let them know you're coming because it's limited seating, and you can go to info@savethepersecutedchristians.org. But, Frank, of course, a lot of people listening can't do that. So I know that you're looking to employ and get people to come along and join this effort just in general. So what would that look like for an organization or even for an individual? What can they do?
Sandy, thank you so much for helping call attention to this. Go to SaveThePersecutedChristians.org, which is our website. There are some terrific resources there, including a news aggregator, kind of like a Drudge for Christian persecution. So you can stay abreast of what's happening around the world. But you can also do something very practical. Just as I was telling you about those signs outside of synagogues with the Soviet Jewry campaign, you can get for free one banner to put outside of your house of worship. And we've had about 1,000 of them around the country right now, but we're anxious to have as many of them as possible, because the more people, both congregants in those churches and people driving by, as I did that synagogue, are going to get educated that there's a problem here and that we need to help save lives and save souls, for that matter, by coming together, becoming part of the Save the Persecuted Christians team, and we would welcome your help.
Yes, and just to explain, you know, of course, that brands the message in your mind when you see those signs. It makes you pray, it makes you be aware, and it makes you, as some of you, actually to do something. It's SaveThePersecutedChristians.org. The press conference is at the National Press Club today at 1:30. And, of course, if you want one of those banners to put in your church or wherever it is that you worship. Maybe you're, well, I don't know what the entity, maybe your barn, I don't know. At SaveThePersecutedChristians.org. Frank Gaffney heard at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time each day on this network, and you're going to hear him in just a second on this show with his minute commentary. Frank, always a pleasure. Take care, and I hope things go well today. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
But be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. James 1:22. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. This scripture underscores the harrowing reality that permeates the life of many who profess to be Christians. The blessing of being a Christ follower comes not only from hearing God's word, but obeying it. James continues, "For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks intently at his natural face in a mirror. For he looks at himself and goes away and at once forgets what he was like. But the one who looks into the perfect law of liberty and perseveres, being not a hearer who forgets, but a doer who acts, he will be blessed in his doing."
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Gillette razor blade company made a catastrophic error by thinking that American men are just fine with being flagellated by irate feminists. Gillette's latest commercial accepts every trope about white American males. There are no minorities in the ad. But reaction to the ad is running 10-1 against. American men are fed up with being stereotyped and blamed for things they had nothing to do with. It's time for a course correction. My new book, The Boy to Man Book, is designed to help today's dads turn their boys into men. Here's an excerpt. Where do the men of tomorrow come from? Well, Dad, you are raising one of them right now. You are shaping an arrow in your quiver, preparing it for flight. Solomon tells us in Proverbs what real men look like. This book will help you impart those truths to your 12-year-old son. Order your copy from afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point. Weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
In the book of Isaiah, the word tells us the grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God endures forever. In the same way, without careful planning, your financial goals could blow away like the seeds of a dandelion. It's never too early or too late to consider how a charitable gift annuity can help you meet the financial goals you've set for your loved ones, your causes, and yourself. Give AFA Foundation a call at 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit our website, afafoundation.net. Let us explain how a charitable gift annuity can help you achieve your goals. As we read in Proverbs, the plans of the diligent lead to profit. Our phone number again is 800-326-4543, extension 345. And our website is afafoundation.net.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Amidst all the talk about Russian collusion, one of the most egregious and consequential examples has received negligible attention. During her tenure as Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton engineered the transfer of lots of high technology, including militarily relevant ones, to Russia's Silicon Valley, in the vain hope of resetting relations with Vladimir Putin. At the time, the Pentagon warned that this arrangement amounted to a, quote, overt technology theft operation, unquote, that gave the Kremlin, among other things, strategically sensitive hypersonic missile know-how and gear. It also massively profited Clinton Foundation donors. Today, President Trump unveils a missile defense plan made necessary by such treachery. His long-awaited missile defense review proposes a comprehensive program of space-based and other means of protecting the American people against the hypersonic missiles Russia and China are now deploying. Unfortunately, we need such defenses yesterday. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. You know, I'd love to hear what you think about, well, let's see, just about everything that we've been talking about. And so this is a chance for us to have a chat. So I'm going to give the phone number. And while you do that, I'm going to read some of your email and Facebook comments because they're terrific. You guys are really the best. Our phone number is 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. This is one from Aaron. He's talking, responding to my conversation about Congressman Steve King. And he said, conservatives should follow the example of President Calvin Coolidge, who during an interview answered no comment to each question. At the end of the interview, he told the interviewer, don't quote me on that. I like that. I thought that was really, really cute. This is from Lucy. I think this is from Lucy. It's got two different names here. No, this is Resta. She says, I am from Marshall Island, and she's listening. And by the way, I had to look that up, Resta, because I didn't know where Marshall Island, I couldn't remember, but it's in the North Pacific Ocean. So that's great to know that you are listening. I don't know if you're actually there right now listening, but thank you. It's nice to know where people are from. This is from, a lot of people commented on the picture that we posted. It was an older black lady standing behind President Trump with her, like her head on the back of his arm and holding his hand. And she had the most beautiful countenance. You just knew she was praying or, you know, some such thing. So a lot of people have commented on that on our Facebook page. But the one I want to mention is from Lisa because she actually found the picture. Because people have asked me, I sent it around in Washington. I actually sent it to the White House and nobody quite knew where it was from. And Lisa said she found the picture on dailymail.com. And it was May 15th, 2018, and it was the lady's daughter was the one who was with the New York Police Department, and she was killed in the line of duty. I had no idea. So, Lisa, thank you for taking the time to find that. And actually, we're going to repost that picture because it is just so beautiful. It's breathtaking. And if many people commented, you know, so the president is a racist, right? So we know that that's not true. It's just not factual. And certainly the lady's not a racist. It's just it's a beautiful picture of sweet grace and love, honestly. And this is from Tom, and he says, I love your show. Regarding the shutdown, I was a military pilot during the Vietnam War. The military had a reduction in forces. I, along with over 6,000 pilots, as well as hundreds of thousands of people, were let go, literally overnight. As an officer and pilot, I had a 4-year contract with the government. A job during the Jimmy Carter years. We were dumped on the streets with nothing and no economy to enter. Where were the Democrats then, and where was the outcry as we hit the streets unemployed and we were hated as baby killers? Isn't that awful, Tom? It's just terrible even to recount that, but it's a very good thing to note that it's a very good thing to note. It's just another injustice. We certainly talk about them enough. I got two emails from people correcting me on something that I apologize up front that I got wrong when I was talking about the book of Philemon and Paul's admonition for the slave to return to the master and make it right, and then for the master to forgive the slave. And I said that Philemon was the slave, and it was not. It was Onesimus who was the slave, which I do know. I got the words, the names transposed, and I don't like to do that. Vanessa was not happy with me for that. She said, talking about the point is from her and also Daryl that Daryl says, as Christians, we have to get it right. And she says, check your facts. Well, she's right about that, of course. And so is Daryl. But I have to say, I probably need your help. You know, you think that radio show hosts around the country sit at a microphone and remember everything that they have to cover from every congressman of every state to every state to every European country and their presidents and all the people and all the terrorist attacks. And I mean, you know, you can imagine the number of nouns that have to be recalled. And I tell you, it's hard. And I wish I were better at it, to tell you the truth. I really do. But generally speaking, radio show hosts have a lot of people that are fact checkers around them. They've got a big staff and they're like helping them, or they're interjecting, or if they misstate something or misquote something, you can bet they've got people helping them to track that down. And that's something we don't have. So I need you. How about this? How about if you hear me say something on the air in real time, send us an email. You can do that. Send it to Sandy@AFR.net, and I'll try to correct myself I can't even say any words, let alone nouns, in better fashion, faster. I do need to get things right. I want to. It's really my goal. I have to say that you must know, surely you all must know, And when it comes to what's actually happening or the analysis or details of the actions of certain entities and groups, that I don't make a mistake on. But some of the words, some of the nouns, sometimes I get confused or use the wrong one. Do you ever do that? Have you ever done that before? You know, you called your children by somebody else's name, by one of your other children's names. I'm thinking maybe you have. So I ask for your mercy, and I also ask for your help. So if I make a mistake in a name or a noun or a fact, you can call, you can send an email to sandy@afr.net, and I'll have Adam track that real time to make sure that we get it right. So, all right, our phone number is 888-589-8840. Onesimus was the slave. Philemon was the slave owner. And Paul was, yes, he did. He sent Onesimus back to his slave owner. He asked Philemon to have mercy on Onesimus. And, of course, that he was now a brother and not just a slave. I could go on and on about that whole issue, but it would take the rest of the segment. I just feel compelled to say this because Vanessa was upset with me. Slavery in the New Testament is treated differently than our current contemporary view of it. Slavery in Greek and Roman times, sometimes a slave was the tutor for your children. Not that slavery was ever good. It's just that it wasn't addressed and it wasn't condemned like it is now, because slavery in the United States was so cruel. And so that's the grid through which we view slavery. But in the New Testament, it was commonplace for people would actually go into bondage to help their families financially. It was a different system. And so that doesn't mean there wasn't cruelty with it, but it's just not viewed the same way. Things do change. Our view of things change. Like, if you don't believe that, think about the role of men right now, that Gillette commercial, and how we look back, you know, on commercials in the 60s, the Marlboro Man or whatever. The roles of the masculine roles have changed. It's become politically incorrect to be a real man as portrayed in the Marlboro commercials. So times and perceptions do change. That doesn't mean truth changes, but you just have to read things written in a certain time and understand the mindset of that time in order to interpret it. So Paul was not saying slavery in that moment. He was not condemning slavery. He was encouraging Onesimus to go back and be the slave. And he was encouraging Philemon, the slaveholder, to treat Onesimus as a brother. So that's all I have time to say on that. And I want to go to the phone line. So let me go first to, let's go to Wayne in Louisiana. Good morning, Wayne. What's on your mind this morning?
Well, Sandy, first of all, appreciate you for all that you do. The Cain situation proves to everyone listening that the political correctness police are at it, and they will always take it out of context and twist when it's anything to do with conservative folks. The other issue that was attributed to Franklin Graham, but I can't personally say I heard that from Franklin Graham, is that there was a statement made that anyone that doesn't think we don't need a wall needs to ask themselves, even God realized that the bad folks don't need to be allowed in? And the question you should ask yourself, have you ever heard of St. Peter?
So, at the Golden Gate.
Yes. So I'm just saying, now as far as Trump leaving the Congress environment, if he wants to hold it in the Senate, I'm all for it. I don't think that he should tuck his tail, and I don't think that he will. I do like the idea of them trying to do something down on the border as a backdrop. What I would love is that he conduct his State of the Union with a large screen showing in the background the support previously given by Schumer and Pelosi. I think that would say it a whole lot.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
I agree with you, Wayne. That's a great idea. Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, that's a great idea. Also, just the visuals of people coming over the border, the masses of them, to just see them climbing over and to see statistics on narcotics, on sex trafficking. It's just, there are so many things that they could do. And of course, that's what Nancy Pelosi does not want him to do. And so we'll see. I think we could probably count on President Trump to get this one right. Not sure what he's going to do, but we'll have to see what he comes up with. Joe in Ohio, good morning, sir. How are you?
Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, just your first caller took a lot of my points, but just wanted to, every time the Trump and the conservatives need to stand strong on border security and the wall, and just every chance they get, point out the wall and the fence around Nancy Pelosi's home. And also, if they, in the future, if they want to avoid the government shutdowns, what they could do is withhold pay from the members of Congress. If they can't negotiate a balanced budget in the future, instead of the TSA agents not being paid, the members of Congress don't get paid. And I think that would expedite a budget and some negotiations. So thanks for all you do.
Yeah, Joe, no, before you go, there are some congresspersons whose names I can't remember in this moment who have introduced that, and senators too. The congressmen and senators should not be paid until they work this thing out. I'm totally in agreement. That makes perfect sense. But, of course, they're the ones that have to make that decision. And the chances of them voting not to get a salary are not very good. But that just illustrates really their corruption. And I agree with you, Joe. Let's go to Calvin in Georgia. Good morning, Calvin. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Santa. Appreciate your show. Love you.
Thank you.
What I want to talk to you about is just right here. The Democrats are always talking about the Dreamers and Birthright Citizenship. And so what they do, they put a tag on the 14th Amendment, which had nothing to do with Dream or Birthright Citizenship. It had to do with the slaves and their descendants. So when you come around to the 1965 Voting Rights Act, and this is where I'm African-American, and I'm in a dog fight down here. So in 1965, you had the Voting Rights Act, and then it only lasted for 40 years. In 2005, they gave another passage which will go to 2025. So in 6 years, Congress is going to have to decide whether or not I, as an African-American, is going to have the privilege to vote again. But African-Americans, they say that the Dreamers need to come in. And if the Democrat people like black people as they say they would, like they say they do, and then they will also eliminate this foolishness that I have to go through Congress every 20 or 25 years to get my voting right and stand it.
Yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand why that still has to be updated either, Calvin. That doesn't make sense. I really don't. I have no answer to that. Because that's a given. That is a given. You know, I don't know if you would agree with me, Calvin, but my observation over these many years that I've lived and watched racial tensions in this country from the 50s and the 60s, the hoses, the dogs, I saw all that. I saw the white and black fountains. I saw the bus, riding in the back of the bus. All of it. It was just horrendous. It's a stain on our national history. But I also have lived through the rise, the tapping down of racism. It has become politically incorrect to be a racist as a white person. That's a good thing. Real racism. That's a fabulous thing. And I have to say, I think that white and black Americans have learned to live together in absolutely beautiful ways, accepting our differences, but loving each other for them, enjoying each other, in fact. And if it weren't for the stirring of the stick of that, the old horrendous racisms on the parts of blacks and whites, I think we could be living in harmony. I don't hear racial jokes. I don't hear any of that. But I hear people who want there to be a problem, festering that sore. But if they would just, if we could eliminate their influence, whether it's Black Lives Matter or the racists who stand in Congress and preach racism, or the race baiters like Al Sharpton, then I think we could have absolutely beautiful future, because our sweat and tears are blended together in the founding of this nation. And so I know that's not what you asked for, but just made me think about it, Calvin. I'm really grateful that you're listening, and we'll talk about this further on another day. Well, tomorrow we're going to be talking about the March for Life. I have a very special guest with a great, compelling story, and you'll want to hear it, so stay tuned. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.